and are we recording?
Oh yeah.
Me and Dan just did sound checks for this together episode, and I gotta say, I think we nailed it with the song, but we didn't have that recorded. But she said we both sound great.
Yeah.
Do you think she meant audibly in the headphones or like as a singing duo? Because I'll tell you what, a lot of two-man radio teams have not released a full music album together.
Oh, I would say we bring both worlds together and do a duet album, but only of different products that we could sell. Like original songs, like the old 30s.
Original songs, or do we do commercialized versions of actual songs?
Well, that's what Katie does on her podcast. And if I get caught biting off my chick...
What does she do? She does parodies?
She'll do her ad read. The fans will pick a song, and she'll do the ad read like the song.
That's getting dangerously close to OnlyFansing, dude.
No, it's not.
It's very close to OnlyFansing. Why do you think they want to hear?
What if I bring that up? The next thing, just the next time we're watching TV, she goes, "Oh yeah, we did Celine Dion." I go, "It just feels like you're getting close to OnlyFans."
She's like, "Oh, here it is." She does her commercials like in a t-shirt and panties,
yeah,
and like whatever song you pick, she'll dance around and sing her commercial too.
I go, "Spank Cam, you know, Spank Cam."
He's like, "Blue Chew, Blue Chew, baby, I love you."
I just hear her in the other room go, "That's seven spanks for Sam the Master." I don't like this.
It's getting so red and stink, Dan. Dan, please, I need the room. So I'm working.
Then I'm working. Should we do a two-man album of original Bonfire-themed songs?
Well, I think we put it out there to the people because this is the Bonfire, Comedy Central Radio Series XM 95. I'm Big Jokerson. That's Dan Soder.
That's what you call a cold open.
Even hilariouslier and handsomer in person. Stop. I always forget.
I put on a dirty shirt.
We have Christine hanging out with us today, running this whole sumbitch.
Yeah, running this rig.
We're having an interesting one today because we're doing two episodes here.
Yeah.
And both of them, we have an interview that we now have to break away from our couch pot hang and then swing over and do a professional interview somehow.
Yeah, but they're two good interviews. They're interviews I'm excited for. Whereas
I'm excited for both, actually.
Yeah, there's sometimes, you know, sometimes, very rarely, we will get a guest where I'm like, "All right, let's do this. You know, let's just get through this one." And sometimes those end up being fun, and sometimes they're definitely booked by Comedy Central.
It is funny, though, even doing radio as long as we have now, which isn't crazy long, but between podcasting and everything, I've been doing it 9 years or so.
I mean, shit, I've been behind the board since 2004. You're talking to an old salty dog.
Yeah, but did you do a lot of interviews?
No, I did all speed breaks. Right. I had no business being on the radio.
So podcasting, we've done interviews, but not many, and... The only one I do where I do interviews with people who I don't know or I'm just like, "Oh, they're famous and we have them in," is like...
Dak Prescott?
We have had this on the Bonfire, but I've... Not on Skanks, really, very much, but on SDR show. I don't know at all. But Ralph is like the lead interviewer, ultimately.
Sure.
And then I can just like... And then it makes me much more comfortable because I'm like... Oh, I actually do have a good question.
Yeah, with our interviews, we're like two 11-year-olds ordering pizza, where we're like, "Who's going to be the adult?"
And what we tend to do is bull through with us just being funny and then just hope the guest laughs.
Yeah.
Like, but I mean, the genuine sense of like, one of our guests tonight, like, you know, personally, I don't know him.
Yeah, Mike Binder.
Do you know the other person personally?
Eric Andre, I knew back when we were coming up, but only briefly. Like, you know how comedy is, you bump into people.
Yeah, that's kind of what I had with him, too. But I knew him, like, we'd talk and stuff.
Yeah,
and shoot
I'm
so proud of him because of, I'm just a fan of his stuff.
That's what I was going to say. I'm more of, Eric Andre's a person where I am more of fan than friend, but knew him in comedy.
Sure.
But I love the Eric Andre show.
Yeah, it's going to be a blast interview.
So those two interviews are happening today while we do the two interviews.
So I'm far more nervous about
Mike Binder. He's the man. He directed Bill Burr's Paper Tiger, the latest special.
Oh, no, I'm aware of his work, but it's like I just don't know him personally. So it's one of the things where you come on, I'm like, "Oh, I hope he gets..." Look, I just had that scary moment with Sebastian Bach.
Which, he sucks.
He does suck.
The difference is Sebastian Bach's a grown hot boy.
Yeah.
Grown hot boys are like grown hot girls, and they don't know how to adjust to life.
A guy wrote to me on my fan page, just wrote the words, "You need your ass whooped only." And I wrote back, "You think?" And he goes, "Abso-fucking-lutely," or something like that. So here's where it always starts off great. then you go and you have to go, well, I got to see what this guy's thing is because it's going to be hilarious.
Once you see what they're about, it always makes sense.
This guy, I'm telling you, every third and sometimes five in a row posts is like Ezekiel 25:4, you know, whatever, you know, Philippians.
Oh, he's 14, all super 1. Biblical?
Super religious and whatever. And he's like, he looks like a bikery dude, whatever. And then I go, he goes, I go, yeah, well, why? I go, you think? He's like, absolutely. I'm like, and why is that? I'm curious. I go, I certainly don't think I'd eat my ass whooped, but I'm curious as to why you think so. And he goes, Rob Halford, man, which I thought was so funny. Because I'm like, I wonder what party he listened to. Because in my head, I go, I wrote back. I was like, Rob Halford is the man. I go, that guy was awesome. He came on. He goes, I think he said he's coming to my shows when I'm in his town. I was like, what? I'm not sure what you think the problem is here exactly. And then he just didn't write back anything at all. It's like, what is this? It's so weird.
Well,
but it's whatever. It doesn't matter, but it's just very, very weird.
First off, he ticked off a fucking God biker, which
God biker is hilarious.
I don't know if you know this, but they don't run on gas. They run on prayers and on a cloud highway to heaven. Whenever you make fun of a group, it's funny to watch it wash down to them. Because I did History Hyenas with Chris DiStefano, and we were talking about Indigenous People Day. And we were talking about, I was like, yeah, man, imagine how the Lakota Nation felt when Sturgis happened this year during COVID, which they all just rolled up and were like, fuck, I mean, masks are around, I guess. And I was like,
park over there in the maze.
We made fun of that so much on this show. We made fun of when Smash Mouth was on it. But this is what I'm saying is when it gets to the people that care about the thing you made fun of, that's when they react. And this guy, you know, I got a tweet.
That's so funny.
It was on Instagram. This guy's like, hey, man, you actually, I know you guys are joking around, but you should really look into what you were saying about Sturgis because you really made it sound like they were irresponsible and they weren't as irresponsible. It's like, dude, it's a fucking joke, dipshit. It's fun to make
it's a joke.
Blow it up all.
It's a joke and it's a biker gathering. And I'll tell you this, it was exactly as responsible as I thought it was. I'm certain of it.
Yeah, but he's like, he made it sound like they were like NBA protocols for Sturgis where they're like, we all took temperatures. Yeah,
temperature check. We all got tested every day.
Everyone got to have their own personalized Black Lives Matter motto on the back of their rocker. They go exactly like the NBA.
You only fuck two big pink fat pigs a day.
He goes, one mama per day. You can only change your mama if you want to at the end.
Don't share your hooch.
Yeah. And another thing, if you're going to boot up, make sure you got a mask on, brother. Yeah.
There's a clean needle drop. There's a clean needle pickup drop off right over here.
It's this thing of like everyone being the victim or having to defend themselves is such a thing now because of not only COVID, but just of social media, how it gets people riled up to the point where they're like, you said the thing that I do. Now I have to hunt you down.
Dude, we're relatively safe, but I do mean this and I say this. If you're going to live life at all and not legitimately hibernate in your house and have food like slid under your door or, you know, dropped off out front.
Which is a cool kind of way to live for a little bit.
Listen, I wish I can go back in time to it and have a little more of like enjoyment of just like I got to do nothing.
Yeah.
Let's binge watch a series today.
Yeah.
You know, instead of being nervous and stuff and on the phone so much. And just trying to, you know, calm yourself down. I wish I had that, but I mean, like, I'm like losing my point already.
No, we were talking about getting upset about a thing. We're relatively safe, but
yeah, we're relatively safe. But I mean, like COVID, saying that being worried about COVID protocols, I'd say we're relatively safe. But every day, there is 50 situations where I can just absolutely get it. Do you know what I mean? Like you can just get so it's like, how do you live like in that? So I'm saying like it's the whole thing with the protocol. You know what I mean? We're doing the protocols. Like, no, you're definitely not doing the protocols. Just admit, but I'm saying, but my point is being like we're being absolutely safe. Like, no, everything you do, especially a grocery store trip, can be a super spreader event. Just from any number
of things.
We're
doing shows. We're doing stand-up shows. I think about that all the time. Where I'm like, ah, fuck. I was even making that joke on stage. I was like, guys, if you get sick, I kept blaming other comics throughout the weekend. You know, while I was on stage, you go, if you guys get sick, you were definitely at a Brian Callen show. So be cool about this.
I do Legion of Skanks. We do that. You know what I mean? Like, I do these shows where it's like, we're taking risks. I walk up, I come in a mask. I try to keep masked on until I, you know, while I'm around people. And then when we sit down and do the show, but I don't know what the fuck Lewis has done all day or Dave or you. You know what I mean? Like, you could have walked in here today with it. Yeah, how do we just know?
Well, I opened that kissing booth at a Walmart parking lot.
I know, which I told you was terrible timing.
Yeah. I said the only mask you're going to wear is condoms after we bang because the kisses are going to be so sweet.
Then you came in here and shotgunned a joint with Christine.
Yeah. I blew it into her face. I did an angel kiss, you know, where you go, bring your butt right in their face.
Yeah. You took my rectal temperature, and then I passed out, and you brought me back to life with CPR.
I butt munched you back to life. There's... the point I was making earlier is like it's funny how quickly everyone gets so serious now about the thing they like. Like even when, remember when Tom Segura made fun of wrestling early in the pandemic and he's like, it's for fucking idiots. All these people were tweeting at me like, dude, did you see what Tom Segura said? Like I was going to be like, well, hold on a second. I was like, oh yeah, dude, it's fake gay fighting. I love it.
It's literally.
I love it.
It's so, same
it's
thing
so
too.
Silly and stupid. And I could absolutely understand how you could make fun of me. You know what I always think about is like when we watch videos of people and we make fun of them, whenever there's a situation of someone being like, yeah, I heard someone shit on you, I'm like, probably. And I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think where you lose yourself is when you start taking something too seriously, you're not fun about it anymore. Where you're like, well, hold on a second. That's anyone that's like, now hold on. Don't make that joke. And you're like, it's a fucking...
Oh, I'll tell you
why. Can you imagine if I was sensitive about my dad being dead?
It'd be tough here.
Or I'd just be like, guys, hey, Jay.
It's my one thing.
Dude, serious Dan, just after a show, I go, hey, pal, can I get a sidebar with you?
You know what? I could say something like funny about your sister passing away in context of a broader scoped joke in a roast. Wait, let me say in a roast.
Oh, we did it on Skanks, and it was one of my favorite jokes we ever made. There was an episode of Legion of Skanks that I was on it where it was me, you, and Lewis, and Dave making fun of my sister dying in a car accident and her being set on fire. And her last words were like, don't do voices. It's just a mask for sloppy writing. It was like, but it's like that. I remember that joke because I'm like, God damn it, dude. That was so funny that however we got to that joke.
But me and you, with the exception of you bringing it up and saying something sort of funny about your sister passing away.
Oh, just to take a random stab at it. It's psychotic.
For me, it would be weird. But I would take a random stab at humor with your dad because it's when you just kind of know someone, you're like, I know the piece you've made with it. I'm not saying like you're completely whatever, but you know what I'm saying? Like the piece you made with it, the jokes I make. Also, I don't have like a, you know, I would never make a joke. That's going to be something where you'd be like, all right, dude. Yeah, like what the fuck? Like, it's just like, it's just not my, it's my speed.
Like, roast, you see, you brought up a roast. And years ago, I remember Joe List was my first friend that like really hit me with roast jokes about that, where I was like, dude, that's so funny. And it was weird to see people, even though it was all comics I knew, still watch me be like, are you all right? Like, I remember Giannis looking at me being like, all right, is this all right? But Joe's joke was hilarious. He was talking about Chris Laker's show at the Creek. And he goes, Chris Laker has a show at the Creek.
Very funny comic, Chris Laker.
Very fun. And he goes, he invites four people out to the Creek on Tuesday, then apologizes for them not being a show. And he goes, there's less people at a Chris Laker show than a soda family reunion. It's like, Jesus. And then he like went off on like all these jokes about my dad. And I was like, ah, it was fucking great. Yeah. That's what sucks about roasts too, is it got taken away from being a friends making those kind of jokes, and instead it's like a dunk competition now where they're like, you roast, and it's like, you're so stupid. You know, you're like, oh man.
That's why, but it was for a minute there, it was for a stand-up comedian, you know, if you broke through on those roasts, it was a surefire
writing
celebrity thing, I think, like almost like immediately, like you go up to like theater act and shit, because if you were doing them.
Oh, you mean on the Comedy Central roast?
Comedy Central roast. Yes. I'm talking about that. I'm saying like it was a full blown. Well, those are the ones you're saying where it's like it becomes not like friends roasting friends.
That's where it started. It started with like in the world of, okay, these Comedy Central roasts seem weird. I remember when Greg Giraldo roasted somebody. He's like, I don't even know you, man. He's like, I don't even know why they have me here.
It's Larry the Cable Guy, maybe.
Yeah, it might have been that, but it was like, oh yeah, Greg Giraldo doesn't know that guy, and then you're seeing like,
right,
B. Arthur. Why is she here?
Just right. It's like they were able to get her.
But it made Schumer. It made Jeselnik. It made,
because
like,
as a comic, you pop on there and it's like, oh, this person like did well in a celebrity thing. And now the problem is like, it just started happening right towards the end there.
Dude, when they started popping up, I almost want to thank COVID for getting rid of roast battles. Thank you for cleansing the earth of roast battles.
But I'm staying with the Comedy Central roast, the big roast. right towards the end of them, like maybe the last two or so, where you started getting like great jokes and the crowd was really, it became like the next day where it's like not really cool to make fun of whatever, and you're oh my god, man, like come on.
Oh yeah, Nikki got in trouble for doing like Caitlyn Jenner jokes,
right? And then like, and then Schumer caught shit for the
Ryan Dunn thing. That was the biggest one, is when she did the Ryan Dunn joke, and then like Jackass fans were like, I'll fucking kill you.
And I wonder if, and this is not a no dig to Amy, it was like a pretty simple joke, that one. I think she would admittedly for her was like, Jesus, to catch all this shit for that.
That is a roast staple.
Sure,
of but, why couldn't it have been?
But I don't know. Like, this is why I used to really operate under the guy. I say this on stage, so it's a bit of a spoiler, but yeah. I know that I used to think that like my jokes, because you know, I remember seeing like Sam Morril caught like rape joke shit.
Yeah,
like, all these people caught this shit for this stuff. And I was like, man, it's weird. I go, I never really get in trouble for shit. I go, it's part of you just goes like, I guess like I'm doing the thing I'm saying. Like, it's so funny.
Yeah.
That people were just like, how could I possibly get mad? This is like, it's obviously a joke. And then I go, it just turned out nobody knew who I was. Because as soon as they found out, like, it just rained shit constantly, you know, from the stupid Seth Simon article. You know what I mean?
Like, it's so funny. You're like, no one messes with me because it's clear that they know I'm a master of
joke. I'm just a master of the craft, and everyone can tell
the probably so jokes. Delicate. And then they're like, hey, this guy's saying all this shit. And you go, what?
Who, me? I thought you guys were okay with that.
Are you guys mad?
It was fine, right? No? Is that fine now? But I'm saying, like, I couldn't imagine, like, even, like, a perfect joke about Ryan Dunn that was like, whoa, what a fucking...
Yeah,
well-written, like, crazy
that wouldn't catch shit?
That still wouldn't catch shit, so it's like, there's almost no...
Who do you think would threaten more? Do you think Paul Walker fans or Ryan Dunn fans? I feel like Ryan Dunn fans would be more about it, like, be about it, would actually do the thing, but I feel like, you know, Paul Walker fans would be... Because that's family.
Yeah.
Let's not forget, Fast and the Furious is about family.
The whole you got the whole Toretto's after you.
Family.
Hey, I wrote a song about it.
Feeling good. Feeling great.
Buddy.
How did that song go? Yeah, I'm feeling pretty good.
Buddy, I want to put this out.
Yeah.
Right now, we might be able to gather around the computer and look at Christine's and do it so we could post it.
Yeah.
Right now, but there, we started watching. This is great, dude. I almost wanted to text you last night with this, but I'm glad I didn't. I was going to tweet it. Christine said, no, wait for the bonfire. She's probably right. Although it should be a tweet that goes out from us.
Okay.
So we're watching this is the second documentary now on Nexium.
Yes, on Stars, right?
On Stars, with which so far in one episode already, like, I'm more intrigued by this one.
My buddy Nick Russo, who listens to Bonfire, like, was like, check out the Stars one.
They dragged 10 episodes out on the first one to really, it got boring a bit because like, okay, so what happens to them? And then the finale just ends where even you see there's 10 minutes left, there's whatever left, and it's like, you know, he gets arrested. No spoiler there.
Man, I hate...
But he gets arrested 10 minutes before the thing, and I go, he's... And then they go, they show a trailer, and I'm like, oh, maybe it's 10 episodes, not 9. Maybe I was wrong. And then it shows this big, long trailer, and it goes, coming back in 2021, like the part two of the story. And I'm like, dude, 10 episodes, they make it 5 and 5, man. Yeah. You don't need to drink it. So this one, the new one, goes right into, like... We're getting branded. We're getting like an episode
boom,
one.
Boom,
yeah.
But dude, start. That's so funny. HBO's like, I was wondering maybe we could go out to dinner. We could have some drinks. Maybe we could take a walk, look at the city, and then maybe have a nice sweet kiss. Stars is like, listen, come in the house, pull your cock out.
Let's go.
You pop. Maybe we'll get some snacks. We'll bang it out again.
Absolutely, dude. It gets right into it, like how they got sucked in, the dumb shit they were believing.
A show not ending strong can really fuck up how you feel about it, because I think of like when something like that comes to an end and you're like, there's 10 minutes left, how is this fucking thing ending?
I hate that.
Versus season 2 finale of The Boys, where you're like, oh, whoa, so it's over, and you're like, how is there still 20 minutes? Yeah. And then you're like, oh my god.
Yeah.
And then there's like 3 things that happen there, you're like, oh shit, and you're like, at the end of season 2, you're like, bring season 3 on right now.
Yeah,
that's like, I don't...
This was the first
one. From what you've told me from the HBO documentary.
It's good.
Sure. But now how you've said, you know, it's like 9 episodes. It's like, I'll just go with the Stars.
Well, buddy, because what it was, the first like 3, maybe 4 or 5 episodes, you're still going like, what did this guy do? They keep bringing, he's so brilliant. He's so smart. He's a business mastermind. It's not. You find out in the first episode of the other one, it's like, well, this guy's been a lifelong fraud and like scam artist. He's always been doing, he did a, he just took like Amway's ideas and turned it into a business success thing. And just like, he was always, but it's always pyramid. It's always like, now Dan, give me $3,000 so I can teach you how to get $3,000 from somebody for this. That's all it is. It's that stupid.
I've told this story several times before on the show, but when I was in Tucson and my friend Marcus from Aurora that was down in Tucson called me, it was like, yo, I got a business opportunity for you. And I was like, to all my friends, I was like, he's going to ask us to sell drugs. And I showed up. He's like, so here's what happens. You guys each get three people and they're salespeople. And I'm like, oh, it's a pyramid scheme? I left disappointed it wasn't drugs. I don't know. I was going to at least sell a half of O, probably try to flip it and see what I could do. But I was like, dude, you're not even fucking giving me that.
I was going to sell for a little bit, and then I was going to find out who his contact was.
I was going to do the Diego from Blow and just cut his ass out.
Cut his ass right out. Find me on my private island, asshole.
Sorry, George Jung. I'm wearing fucking camo and carrying around a hand cannon. Yeah, dude, it's the pyramid scheme to me. Always, every single person should at least get approached by someone they know in a pyramid scheme to know how offended it feels.
You
get offended.
As my neighbor, I was going to stop doing comedy.
Yeah.
Like a year or so in.
Yeah.
I was going to go back to school. I was just like, yeah, this isn't going nowhere.
You're
going to
go straight?
I was going to go straight. And then I started doing my neighbor was like, well, I run a training facility for Cutco. That was a Cutco knives.
Yeah, Cutco
that's pyramid.
Yeah, the one in Colorado was called Spyderco. It might be Spyderco. The knife thing, which was dudes when high school was ending, when they were like, I don't know, I gotta get a fucking job. I might sell knives.
Kirby sales, the Kirby vacuums.
Yeah, is it Spyderco knives? Yeah. Dude, that's so funny. Guys just going around door to door selling knives.
Yeah.
That was how you were going to get out of the life.
Yeah, that's what I was going to take me all the way back to college.
Dude, that is.
McKeith Robinson, the third day of the final day of training.
I got a gig for you.
Final day of training, I did not go to because I picked up a gig and it was like flying to it. And I was like, wow. This was
so weird. Yeah, with Keith, right?
And then Keith was the other I was opening for Keith. I never met Keith before. I met at the airport. And I was
the first time I'm using a wheel man.
So the documentary, episode one, season one, and I assume she's going to be at the whole time. This, you know, when you have something funny that makes you feel half bad?
Yeah.
You do feel half bad, but it's worth giving to the world.
My deaf impression of that every time.
Don't ever want this to get back to this lady because she seems very well informed and I actually like her on the documentary very much. She's a cult expert.
Okay.
I'm breaking down very intelligently what this guy does and what even the parts where you're like, well, that's not so sinister. Like he's trying. She's like, no. Every like element of what this guy does is calculated to do this, to do what he did. And it's crazy. But if you look at her, Christine, give me the remote. Give me the remote. Oh, I'll get it. It's over here.
I'll vamp. It's remote music. Remote folded ass.
Remote folded ass.
Remote folded ass.
Dan, this is going to make you so happy. I'm so happy you're here for this.
Wait, so I can watch this lady?
Yeah.
Dude, I got to get stars.
You don't even have to hear this lady for a second. No need in hearing her.
Just to look at her? You're going impression off looks?
This is all looks.
No, okay.
Okay. Now, as we move through this episode, it's very, very good. When they speak to cult expert, and I want to have her name.
Man, okay. I think I'm going to subscribe to Stars so I can watch this.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you have to watch this, dude. It's really, it's crazy. To get involved in this at all is a mind, and I know there's a chance we might have Catherine Oxenberg and her daughter on the show.
Oh, is that being worked out?
I think it is. So I don't want to smash them too bad, but I do have a lot of questions to ask about how you even get duped in to begin with. It's just,
I mean, dude, you're ask anyone that's ever been a part of a pyramid scheme.
You know, it's fine. Well, she's also the one girl. The daughter also was like 19 years old. Okay, you tell me, Dan, that this cult expert they're about to talk to, that's India Oxenberg, and then you tell me that lady doesn't look like Sylvester Stallone wearing a wig.
That's so funny.
Hey, so every time she come on, I just probably go, hey, you know, cults is not that good of a thing.
People like to belong to things, you gotta, you know? Dr. John, my God, dude. It's, you know what it is? It's the area between her mouth and eyes.
Hey, you know, I mean, dude, that's a picture of Sylvester Stallone, dude.
Hey. I was wondering, you know.
I don't know.
You know, if you were in my call, I was wondering if you could toss me down a follow. You know? I was wondering maybe you could let me brand you.
Did you find her, Christine, on the computer? Dr. Janja Lilach? Dr. Janja Lalich.
Now, if you anagram that, anagram it to John Rambo.
Flip the words around.
She does look like
Sly. Disturbingly looks like Sly Stallone.
If her name was Loretta Stallone, I would be like,
100%.
Oh, there she is. He goes, no, you got to understand that a cult leader is a different kind of person.
I'll tell you, I'm not convinced. She's not related somehow to Sylvester Stallone.
She goes, well, hold on. I was born in the Red Hook District.
Or it looks like maybe, you know, you could tell people for sure that Frank Stallone in quarantine got reassignment surgery.
He goes, take me back.
Do, 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 do.
Take me back.
Hey, I'm down, but I'm far from over.
Hey, you know, if you're going to turn me in from an outie into an innie, at least let me have a piece of haircut.
You see, in cults, it's not about how hard you get hit. How hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit keep moving forward.
That's the co-leader. You can't call him a bum.
Yeah.
You're not a bum.
Hey, Keith Raniere, just go back to being what you were. A crumb bum.
You gave my group sex to Spider Rico.
Dude. I found it puzzling how much he looks like Sylvester Stallone.
I don't see it completely. I see it between the nose and the eyes.
Wow.
Mouth, I don't.
I see it. It looks like Sylvester Stallone to me, and I can't unsee
it. Wait, does it look the way, like, in cartoons when they're hungry and someone turns into a chicken?
Yeah, I'm just seeing Sylvester Stallone's face only. Put a hat on her.
Put some stubble and a toothpick. That's Cobra.
That's the lady. Dude, this guy must... Keith Raniere must have slung dick because the whole thing... going to a five-day retreat and being like, all right, you guys are going to be all my friends and everything now. Another fun fact that they didn't say at all. Didn't mention at all.
In the HBO doc?
In the HBO one at all. Catherine Oxenberg.
Yeah.
In the HBO one is all about her. She's a lady from Dynasty. She's the daughter of a princess of Yugoslavia or something.
Yeah.
Just she's a nice lady.
Yeah.
I don't know if she's coming on, but she's joined this thing. She was married to, and I don't know if we even get to Nexium questions, but how excited I am for this. In this first episode, it shows you that she joined it at first with her daughter and her husband at the time.
Uh-oh.
Husband?
Uh-oh.
Casper Van Diem.
Who's that?
Starship Troopers, and then a bunch of other,
my
like,
God.
A bunch of other like low budget. He just became like a.
Bring up Casper Van.
You don't remember Casper Van Diem?
I remember him from Starship. If he's the guy,
gorgeous
dude. From Starship Troopers.
He's a hunk, and she's older.
Yes, that is the guy I remember.
Mm-hmm.
Man,
and she's older, dude. Like, so she really pulled a.
That was them.
But he liked living in that. I bet he liked living in that lavish ass house.
I wonder if he had like a crush on her when she was on Dynasty.
Possibly.
Like almost like Ashton Kutcher, Demi Moore.
On Dynasty though, they even show clips of her in this in Dynasty. In Dynasty, she was hot, like when she was younger, for sure. But in Dynasty, she was so like, you wouldn't even thought twice of it about it.
So she joins the cult with her husband, this young stud.
Casper Van Diem.
Is he the father of her daughter?
No.
He's way too young.
But they had a kid, right? Didn't she have another kid with him?
Oh, she has a little kid. She has a little Starship Trooper.
Oh, dude. So he was her piece of meat. He was like her young boy toy.
Absolutely. Absolutely her young
boy toy.
And
then she drops the boy toy for fucking volleyball dork?
No, she didn't. I think they just broke up. She went to it and was like, oh, all right. And then it was like the sashes. She was kind of left with like a, it's kind of weird. But her daughter stayed and she was like, whatever. And then her daughter's like, I'm going to go on the path to becoming a coach, which is like, that's when you're in. That's when you're totally in. But watch, I have a hard time, dude, watching these people cry about what they've done and being so excited when he got arrested and jumping up and down. It's like, you are all nitwits.
Yeah, you're all nitwits. It's, man.
Dude, I don't know why I have a hard time feeling bad. I know they're the victims. I'm not victim blaming. I'm just like, all these things, like, right away when he goes, $3,000 a person to come this
retreat.
What are you going to do? He goes, We're going to do, and then even, I mean, their whole program is set up exactly like Scientology. Like, sit across from a person, we're going to get a breakthrough. And they just ask you prodding questions. Dan, they're going to come to you. It's just, you'd see it because it'd be so obvious. You're going to see you in front of a group, and he goes, so you lost your father when you're young, but you didn't get to say a lot of things to him, and blah, blah, blah.
So like you that. You know those... I mean,
you lost. So you have a fear of loss. Like,
yeah.
You ignore death because you choose to... And you're going to go, and then they're relying on you going like...
Yeah. So I kept pivoting.
I never thought of those very obvious things myself. Take a quick break. We'll be right back. It's the Bonfire.
It's Big J Okerson.
Yeah.
What, like, I want to say 2010, 2011. Scientology reading? I was, what's that?
Scientology reading?
Yeah, I was.
I think Christine did too.
Yeah, an e-meter.
Let me guess, you guys both need it.
No, an e-meter reading. So I knew what it was. I'd done a paper on Scientology in college, so like I knew it was a cult.
You were in.
And I knew that Dianetics was the only way to unlock my theatin level. And I was like, listen, if I'm going to become clear, then I got to get my theatin level up. And the only way to do that's e-meter readings.
Now, theatin, you want more aliens inside of you? Is that the idea?
You got to release your aliens.
Get the aliens out.
Come, your alien. So,
get me Thetan.
Thetan level rise to the great Xenu.
I left the Thetan bukkake all over Christine's back.
Oh, I'm letting it happen. So I was in Times Square, and I was hungover, and I was like waiting for something. I think it was to go to a gig, and I had to meet someone near the Port Authority. Mm-hmm. And they were like, e-meter reading. And I was like, yeah, fuck it. Whatever. I'm hungover. I know how these assholes, I know what they do, like how they would turn it up to make it.
I said yes in Times Square to it once, but then they told me it was like, it's hilarious. I only didn't go, I knew what it was, and I was like, oh, this would be funny. And then it was just like, you have to go to this building and blah, blah. And they even tell you, it goes, you never, like, Tom Cruise might even be over there. And it was just like, you had to go a couple blocks. It was out of my way. I didn't know New York well enough to be like, I kind of know where I'm going here. This, you take me off the path. I was like, I'm okay. No, I'm good.
This one, they had it there. They had like the two things outside that you hold. They had it right there in time. It was at 42nd Street Station in Times Square, down where like the 1, 2, 3 connects with the NRQW.
Oh, inside the tunnel.
It was in there. And I was leaving the N train, and I was like going to sing, and I'm like, oh, fuck it, dude. I got like 30 minutes. And I was either going to do that or go get a beer. So I grabbed it, and he was like, what are you feeling right now? And I was like, hungry. And he's like, okay. What are you feeling right now? And I was like, still hungry. And he was like, all right. What about now? I was like, I thought about my uncle. And he's like, well, what did you think about your uncle? I was like, how awesome he is. And I just kept, every time they would try to hit me.
How he's always hungry?
Yeah. But every time they would try to, because I saw what they were doing. They were trying to pivot me. It was the way Fanoia like described, like you take away the options until there's only one thing left to say. So they kept trying to pivot me to be
That's my trick. But,
yeah.
Well, and also, I'm saying you're also a guy on the sidewalk.
I call you the L. Ron Hubbard of comedy. Yeah.
Ted Bird Houdini.
Yeah. Ted Bird Houdini. And I just kept being like pivoting every time they would try to get me out of it. I'd be like, no, he's awesome. And I'd go into it. And they were like, okay. Okay. Well, you should probably do another e-meter rating at one of our centers. And I was like, oh, get the
fuck. Of course. He goes, my uncle. He goes, what about him? He goes, he fingered my asshole. And they go, well, that's something right there. He goes, because I asked him to.
Because I bought him a drink.
The e-meter. Yeah. He's like, I don't.
Because I told him if he didn't, I would tell my aunt that, that he made me suck his dick. Yeah. Like, who
so
are
then
you?
What he goes, so then, but then he forced me to suck his dick. He goes, so you didn't want it. He goes, yeah, but I didn't tell my aunt because I said I would tell her if he didn't suck my dick. But then I don't know. It's a weird thing. And they go, the e-meter thing just spinning around.
Yeah, goes, like, I don't know what to ask you. And I go, I asked for it.
Yeah. I wanted it.
Yeah, my uncle.
I'm pretty sure I asked for it.
You go, my uncle tried to get me arrested. He said I was too aggressive for trying to blow him. I was 8. And they're like, who are you?
Like, that happened with therapy with Stan on American Dad. At one point, he remembers like swinging on a rope swing to like a priest. Guys were in a priest collar.
Yeah.
He's in the pool. And he goes, and someone just goes like, you're remembering that's really wrong. And it's like the priest. Like the priest is like swinging on the rope swing, like nervous, and Stan's like a little boy. Like he's like asking for it completely.
Yeah, but those guys, they're like, I think the open micers of Scientologists, so they're just down there. I really should have blown his mind. I really should have sat down and been like, brother, look at me. My theatin level. Xenu wants me to tell you. And he'd be like,
oh, dude, so if you get filmed, you go on like, it goes, dude, I'll be honest with you, I think all this kind of stuff. So,
listen to me. Xenu. This is Xenu. Communication through me.
And give me everything you have in your pocket.
Yeah, the guy's like, okay. Give me the keys to the center.
Where's your wife? Let me look her over and see if I want a piece.
Dude, that's fucking... To come out of Scientology I wonder if it's the feeling, like when you come out of a cult, is it the feeling of when you're hungover and you regret everything you said when you were drunk?
By the episode one, India Oxenberg really is like, everything she says, like, I don't know. Like, she sounds very much in her head, like, I don't know, it sounded right at the time.
I mean,
it was like the making people, dude, this couple in the HBO one, they're going to be in this one too, I think, but they stayed together. Right, she's the person who played the woman who took in Luke Skywalker at the end of part three.
Yeah,
she's the mom and, you know, Uncle Ben and whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Or, not Uncle Ben, whatever. Uncle whatever he lives with, his uncle and aunt.
Yeah,
she was the aunt. Her and her husband is the guy who made the documentary What the Bleep Do We Know.
Yeah,
they were a couple. They get in. He gets in at first. He brings her in. One of the things when they're in there is like they start to. It's so funny. You got to start like the women's group. Is supposed to be empowering of women, but all it's doing from everything he says, he's right in the face about it. It's just desensitizing you to guys treating you like fucking dumb bitches. It's insane. You know what I mean?
I'm gonna watch this.
It's like a man wants you to it's like a man's gonna tell you to do whatever, but don't be victimized by that. Just make the bed. You know what I mean? Isn't that sort of what he's saying, Christine, the whole idea?
The whole thing's pretty ridiculous, what he's telling this woman. Like, it's all based in misogyny.
Yeah.
And they're making it out like a woman's group. And this girl, the idiot, what's her name? Nancy Saltzman, yeah. Who's like the leader. She's like, I know, it's the first women's movement created like a man, created by a man. It's so weird. And I'm like, yeah, shouldn't be a women's movement created by a man.
She goes, but there's no man like him in the world, the most unique man I've ever met in my life. She just buys
they're
him
all
totally.
Like in love with him. And the guy Mark, so the guy that did What the Bleep Do We Know, there's something where you're like, are you like this emotion he has towards another man, you're like, is this a closeted gay thing? Dude. Like, is there something where you're in love with him? Because
is this the way I describe Joe Montana?
It's worse. It's way worse, way different. But he goes, so this couple, one of the things in their marriage they did in the girls group, it was like, we just gotta like make sure we have the roles all played here. Like, your wife has to do some penance for some of the things she's done in her life, so she has to sleep on the floor like a dog next to you while you sleep in the bed. And they just did it.
How is that possible that at least through half the night you just look over the side of the bed, you go, are you all right?
I mean, yeah.
And she's like,
in fact,
I'm okay, thanks.
She calls him at one point. This is early in the documentary, but they circle back to it like so much later, but it's her when she was leaving, the wife leaves before the husband, and she's like, yeah, I'm having some like just memories here kind of popping up and just things in my head going right now of like things that Keith did to me that are like bad, and like bad things have been done to me, and I don't like this, and I'm getting out. And he's like, I'm gonna call Keith and talk about this. I mean, I'm not exaggerating at all. He's like, I'm gonna call Keith and talk about it. He goes, Keith says you're just being crazy, so like just don't be crazy. And she's like, well, I'm going to leave. And he's like, all right, but I'm not. So, like, it is. And then just try to get him to break up constantly. But they're still together. And I'm like, this lady, even if he got out and they decided to work together and be friendly to bring this guy down later, how do you go that you were able to let a guy come in there? Can you imagine if you started giving me the rules on what I do with Christine?
Yeah. I go, hey, Jay, you're going to have to probably call me before you order any food with Christine. I just want to know what you guys are consuming.
It is exactly. You're not exaggerating. That's exactly what they start doing.
But the main, you know, we talk about Nippy.
Yeah.
There's one scene with Nippy and Mark, because Nippy seems so happy-go-lucky, but once they're out and they're talking together, you really see, like, the shame on Nippy's face. Like, he seemed like his entire demeanor.
Not for being named Nippy, by the way.
Yeah.
That's not a shame.
Yeah, he walked through that as a child.
His wife, though, Nippy's wife, because she's older.
Miss Nippy?
She's older with...
Mrs. Nippy?
She's older with a really good body. She can't wait to show you that scar, that fucking shit. I've never seen a woman unbutton her pants and pull it down like right beside her sniz to show you that scar a zillion times.
Yeah, she goes, I'll show it to you right
there's
now.
Some great
Nippy
cross
don't like it.
Some great crossover things though, when the guy's explaining to Catherine Oxenberg, the couple,
yeah,
they're saying like, and then she was sleeping on the floor, and I just sat there and let it happen. It was crazy. And she's like, yeah, oh my god, sleeping on the floor. Like, she's like laughing about it, and they're all like sort of laughing about it. And then you see him like, you know, it's not funny. Or I'm not ready for this to be funny yet. We can't get, this is ridiculous and not funny. And then it cuts to the girl who keeps showing her scar.
Yeah.
And she's like, I put this Dermatex stuff on it. It's like, it's the best it can do to help heal the scar. She goes, seems like a commercial for Dermatex, right? Like, hey, do you need to get rid of your sex cult, regretful pelvis scar, then use Dermatex. Hey, Dermatex, for all your sex cult regret scars.
That's a new bit. I'm trying that one.
She's laughing her ass off. He's like, "Who am I ready?" The guy. I understand almost more the guy not being ready to handle it because, like, if it's like if a guy walked up and he was like, in front of you and your chick, you and Katie are walking. A guy goes, "I'm gonna punch you in your face if you don't suck my dick," and then you just do suck his dick, and he leaves you alone. Like, you still have to go home and be like, "Hey, I sucked the guy's dick." Even your chick would be like, "Fight him!"
Yeah, like, well,
I'm not talking about a gun or anything like that. I'm just talking about like a fucking. I'm gonna punch you in the face if you don't. You go,
like, God, you're so masculine.
He's like, "Make your girl suck her own titty while you suck my dick," and you go, "Honey, just suck your own titty."
Because he doesn't even have a weapon. I go, right. So imagine how scary it is.
So suck your titty.
This guy clearly knows hand-to-hand combat.
Oh my God, will you please just suck your titty and
please
stop?
Suck your titty, and I'll just blow him quick. I'm going to blow him so fast. I just want to go home. I worry.
That's what it is. This guy was such a bitch, like, around his fucking wife. Like,
I know this is why we do the show, because it always offshoots into something else. But I would love to hear stories, if campers are honest and willing enough to share them, about bitching out in front of your girl. Like, just being like,
it's gonna be a hard one.
That's a hard sell. That's a hard share.
I had a good. My one with Carla was I used to tell it on stage. It was a movie theater when she kept getting loud to people in the movie theater. And I'm like, I just knew it was a bad situation. And then we went outside. There was like all of his friends were out, or two of these guys, and all of their friends were there. And they started talking. And I told Carla, it was pretty early in our dating too. And I was like, hey, I'm like, these guys are outside. Like, they're. I just know this enough from being where I grew up. I'm like, these guys are gonna be outside. They're gonna do shit. He goes, I can't. There's two of them. Already, and we heard them inside calling their friends, saying to meet them at the movie. You know what I mean? I'm just like, whatever this is, let's not say it. And then we started going, I was like, we had 50-50 choice of which direction we can go, and we picked the wrong one to go to the car. We were parked. You had to go around the back to the parking lot or something like that. So, or we were parked in the street maybe even. Like, we didn't pay for the parking lot even. Is Kaufman Astoria.
Yeah.
You know that?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
So I think that we didn't park in the lot. I think we parked on the street because I was broke.
Okay.
And we're walking around and we see them on the corner, and that's what I was just like, I said to her, it was such a bald debunking thing, but I went, hey, I go, I just see this thing. It's like, let's just, like, they're gonna talk shit when we walk by, like, just keep head down, keep walking forward, please. Like, they're gonna, I already knew it was gonna be embarrassing. And she was like, yeah, totally. And then when the guy said one thing, she turned around and she was like, why don't you suck my fucking dick?
Oh, Carla.
I'm like, yo. And I'd like grab her by the arm and pull her away. I'm like, let's go. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, it's all gonna come on me.
Yeah.
These guys are all going to hurt me.
Videos of guys getting beat up. There's that classic one that's on the 4Train or whatever that was on WorldStar, where the guy is wearing like a reflector vest, like he works for MTA, and there's a lady talking shit to him that's with a guy. And he's like, yo, keep talking shit. I'm going to beat your boyfriend's ass. And she's like, fuck you. And then he just lights up the dude. We could probably find that video.
I would be way more mouthy on my own than with a man. Because if you're ever mouthy with a man,
you're writing checks for him.
Yeah.
In trouble. Like, if I, you know what I mean?
I wouldn't talk shit. If there were like three chicks, you know what I mean? And I'm like, you trashy fucking cunts. My girlfriend will fuck you up. She'd be like, what are you doing? That's the only way to get.
I would do that.
You do that to Christine?
No, but I wouldn't set her up to fucking thing. I would just like, because then I can do whatever.
No, I'm saying you do the reverse thing where you set her up, where you're like,
No, I got you. But it's setting her up, but I wouldn't be setting her up. I'm saying I would talk shit to chicks, no problem. So they came over to try to, like, straighten Christine out about it. Like, I would just protect Christine.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
You just fight women.
I just fucking shove them around, probably, if they come looking for that fucking heat 301. But if they do,
two head knocked into each other moves.
But I would. Here's why I'd be held up. They go, yo, one of us versus your chick. And I'd be like, Christine? I go to Christine, I go
pick your poison.
Christine's one-on-one.
Yeah.
Like, here's the thing, it's like one-on-one I can't really defend you because, like, you should be able to defend yourself. Although,
and then she goes, the blonde, you go, you could see her roots. She'll fight you to the end.
I wouldn't expect Christine to jump in a fight that I was in at all. In fact, I would worry about her getting hurt. But I mean, like, if I was 100%, I'll tell you, if Christine was in a fight with a girl and the girl had the drop on Christine at all, like, first of all, I would try to make it so the girl couldn't get the drop on Christine. I would aid in ways that I could possibly aid.
Yeah.
But I would tell you that I would have no problem. If a girl got the drop on Christine, I would kick her in the face. I wouldn't give a shit. I would just blindly back her up.
Do some fucking blinding salts. Maybe hit her with your megaphone.
I thought in my head, the situation where you got pulled off stage, the reason why I was angled where I was is because I was like, oh, if this bitch tries to pull something, I can go show Jay that I'm not a pussy, because I'll knock this chick out before this guy.
And it was
her brother. I think she's a pussy.
Jay thinks I'm a tall pussy, but I know. I'll fucking wreck this 24.
Dude, by the way, he has set you up to fight somebody for the past 5 years of this radio show, because every time he's like, you're a pussy.
Christine ain't shit. In the fighting arena, pussy. I'm not a good fighter. Really.
Too many fucking faggots in this city.
Like,
I know that I'm fighting a girl. So with the exception of a girl that's like, you know, 250, 300 pounds, where they just have weight on me. Like most chicks, especially my size or under, I'm like, I can take this chick.
I don't fuck with anybody because of the sport of hockey. Like a tiny white dude, sometimes you'll see him and you'll be like, this guy ain't shit. And then you're like, you know, that guy played hockey. You never know who played hockey.
Yeah, I'm not a good fighter, but I'm just like, all I have, which is not an advantage at all, is just I've been in enough that like the situation isn't shocking. Does that make sense? Like when I got pulled off stage,
yeah.
And I was able to like as soon as it was like that, I was like landed and not broken. I started going in the act. You know what I mean? Like I was like immediately doing a thing. Do you know what I'm saying? I wasn't frozen by like. What was that?
Huh. I'm lucky enough that my head can absorb a lot of damage.
Thumps?
So I could take some thumps and then realize what's happening in the situation. That's happened to me before where I've been punched and then realize where I'm at.
I've never been punched to a knockout, so I don't know if I have a
I've never been knocked out, but I've been punched in the head a bunch.
I haven't been punched in the face a ton. I've been punched in the face a decent amount, I guess, actually. But like, I've never been knocked out, but I've never been like... I just don't know if I have a glass jaw. I might have a glass jaw. I might have a button that puts me right out, but I've never caught like a flush. Like,
yeah.
I've never caught a flush.
Dude, then you're just like,
most punches I've taken are like nose. I'm surprised I haven't broke my nose before from punches, because I've had these ones wet. Where it feels like it was going to like...
When your eyes get all...
Yeah, you're like, yeah, exactly.
Stop.
But I've never... I think Christine, even like in a one-on-one fight she was in, like, if I could help... Even relatively violently, I probably would. But kick to the face is probably a bit drastic. But I would like grab a chick by the hair and like
pull her right off.
Like, I mean, like
like a feral cat.
Yeah, without a doubt, for sure.
Just toss her
for sure. Or I'd like just flat out like hold her arms and let Christine get a few shots. Like,
get her in there, and then the story passes. You're like, dude, you know that they.
I would take that one right on the chin. They go, that was pretty fucked up, Jay. I go, yeah, I'm not gonna sit there and watch Christine get punched in the face. I like her face.
Wins a win. Win's a win. Let's take a break. We're going to be right back. It's the Bonfire on the Quarantine Tapes. On Showtime, which you can see each episode Sunday nights at 10 p.m. Please welcome to the show, Mike Binder, everyone.
Wow.
You got, dude. Full arena.
I didn't realize you had such a big studio audience.
Full arena. Yeah, we let them all in.
Dan?
Yeah?
That was a heartfelt intro. I do. Let me tell you what you got from that intro. You and Mike are, in fact, friends. He's a buddy. He is a great guy. He is a director of a 5-part docuseries.
Called The Comedy Store?
You did not name.
Damn it, I just realized that.
They know when they can watch it. They know the station. They know if they have to get a subscription. But
it isn't. That's how you sell intrigue, Jay. That's how you sell intrigue. Everyone's like, what did he direct? What's going on Showtime? What is it?
It's like about Chernobyl.
Yeah. He did
Southfield, Michigan went up in a nuclear blast. Yeah. It's really depressing. It's dark.
It's all about underweight babies and the effects of what the water did to them. No, the Comedy Store it's called The Comedy Store.
You're competing with two simultaneously running Nexium docuseries.
Yes. About cults. Let me tell you something. There were a lot of sexually abused babies at the Comedy Store. we have them beat.
Yeah.
So everybody... Pauly Shore started his own female sex cult.
Yeah. So, you know, it's funny because I was interviewing Pauly, and it was so... I love Pauly. I was Pauly's babysitter. That's how I started. That was my first job there. And he was a little kid, and we were talking. You guys would babysit me. And you guys really liked me. It wasn't just because you worked for my mom, right? And, we liked you. And he said, one thing though, man, no one ever molested me, you know? And I went, no. He goes, because you would think with all these comics around, I'd be the one kid that would be molested. And I just couldn't hold back. I went, well, you weren't all that appealing. And
which I don't know if anyone's ever been that honest with Pauly Shore's entire life. They're like, Pauly, you're just an unfuckable kid.
Yeah. What can I do? He would wing at him too. He'd come out, he goes, who wants to diddle the weasel?
Guess who's a deep sleeper?
I'm gonna wheeze your nugs.
I'm gonna get you all slippery dipper. And yeah, dude, that's got to be a heartbreaking thing for a kid to find out that you just can't get molested even if you wanted to. You're like, I kind of felt that way. My mom brought around a lot of, you know, random drunk dudes, and I never caught a touching.
Well, I was kind of wanted to go, hey, Paul, what are you saying about us?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. You know, Mike, of all people, I can't believe you never tried to touch me.
I mean, if anyone's going to get molested, it's me with all you creeps. You know?
Yeah.
I really should probably hit some therapy or get some hypnosis, because two people now recently in my life have said very quickly that I was so interested in sexual stuff young that it must have happened. Somebody must have got a shot at my old little dinger.
So you feel like if you go under some hypnosis, that'll unlock like the scene where you'll be like, back in the tuxedo store, mom's friend Angelo.
Dude, did really like, you know, when I was a little kid, trying to play house and do stuff like that. Just very young, very, very young. And then I didn't have sex at all till I was 17. I just turned 17, I think. But I'd never... But besides that, when I was young, porn from a young age, if I could ever find it, I was so intrigued by it all the time.
Well,
so yeah, probably.
So see who around you has the most money from when you were a child.
I was going to pin it on Pauly Shore.
Yeah.
That's how you get it. I mean, Mike,
I don't think you can get away with it in the world not to start thinking about it young. I was in New York with my son, and he must have been about 7. And we're in one of these little kind of stores, these long, thin stores where you can go in and get cigarettes and groceries and stuff. Oh, yeah.
Get a bodega.
Bodega. That's the one. And I call him. I'm paying for things. And I call him. And I look back. And he's in seeing these magazines on the back wall. And he's just like,
yeah.
This. I go, let's go, Bert. Let's go. So we're leaving. And he's walking down, and he's walking with me, and he just goes, hey, Dad. I go, yeah. He goes, hey, could we ever come back to New York one day, and, like, you would be, like, maybe working on a movie, and I could maybe work with you? I go, yeah. Yeah, that could happen. He goes, and, like, if we came here and I was working with you on the movie, would I be allowed to kind of go off by myself sometimes? I go, yeah. And I'd be able to just go by myself places? Yeah. Okay, could you remember where we are right now? Yeah. I go, yeah. He was like thinking way into the future. He's how, like, do I get back here?
I got to get that magazine.
Moment. Dan's father used to let those magazines babysit him while he worked at a store like that.
Yeah, so my dad worked at a liquor store called Dan's Liquors, and in the back of Dan's Liquors there was a whole rack of like nudie mags. And so in the back, it was like you could go into the back hallway, and on the left side was the nudie mags. On the right was like an entrance, a hallway to go into the back of the building. And so I would go into the hallway and then just stare at the nudie mags across the aisle, because so no one could see me. And then one time I reached out, it was Marilyn Chambers was on the front of a magazine.
Classic.
I just remember she had her breasts were over her bra on the cover of it. Yeah. And I was like, well, I got to grab that one because it's right on the cover. Yeah. And I remember reaching out for that one, and just through the security cam, I hear my dad go, Daniel. And I was like, I fucking bolted.
Do you know what the pieces of shit have since done to the nudie magazine?
What?
It is now the plastic that it's wrapped in.
now has a black bar across the whole thing. Can't see a damn thing anymore.
Come on. That was my favorite thing, was just to look to see who was naked on the front, where I was like, oh, that's a good one. That's
Chambers was a big, and you didn't even have context at the time that she was the Ivory Snow girl who ended up doing porn. That was a big, big deal.
Had no clue. Just knew that she was a lady with her boobs out in the front of a magazine, and I was close to reading it or looking at it.
Does the documentary get into the culture, Mike, of, because I will tell you, in my time at the Comedy Store, which has been, I guess, a little under a decade, I think, since I've been working there with any kind of regularity, and I've seen a lot of porn stars there, because it's the LA culture kind of there. It's like
there was really there in the Kinison era, in that you know, which was last, the episode that aired last Sunday night, episode 3, but and Sam had his, and Paulie too. Sam and Paulie, and there was in Dice, that era, there were a lot of porn stars around, you know?
Yeah, because that's like the rock and roll party very hard, sinful kind of life, you know?
I brought a lot of porn stars in when I was there, but more like Ron Jeremy and stuff. Which is really sad.
He's bringing the bummer guys. Like, this guy needs a place to dry off.
That's one of my favorite. It's one of my favorite comedy stories, when Ron Jeremy came to the Comedy Cellar and narcoleptically fell asleep in the corner of the room, but nobody knew he was in the room. And I had the first joke that I told that got a big laugh. I go, that joke was so funny, it murdered Ron Jeremy.
You're absolutely right, though, because there was, and actually there was I think Marin tells this story, that there was a Monday night for a while that where all the porn stars and hookers and escorts and everybody would come in. It was just this one night
that
attracted them, you know, on Sunset Boulevard.
Dude, it sex was, appreciation night.
Yeah, sex appreciation night.
Get everybody
sex,
in there.
Sex workers drink for free.
Yeah, you go. Dude, they got a 2-for-1 on Mondays at the store.
It was wank luck night. It was like, whenever you go up and you get your 3 minutes, and that was it.
I have to assume there's a porn star in the world that one of her first jobs in L.A. was working at the Comedy Store, like waitressing or something.
Yeah, I'm sure. There has to be. But I'll tell you what, when, you know, it starts, the first episode starts in, you know, in the early 70s and goes to the late 70s. And I got there in the late 70s. And I was probably there until the late 80s, early 90s. And it was really crazy for a while. It was really crazy. But then when I left, it got even crazier.
You come in the late 70s, and you're looking around, and you're coming from New York, right?
Detroit.
From Detroit. I forgot. You're from Michigan. Yeah. So you come from Detroit to L.A., and you're seeing all this shit, and you're like, this is fucking wild. And the fact that you left and it got crazier, it just kept going. When you left and you looked back and saw how crazy it was going, were you like, there's no way I could have fucking survived that?
Oh man, when I would go back for a while, it was just nuts. And even Letterman, like I had Letterman there, and he goes, I would go back, and I just go, I'm afraid someone's gonna hurt me. You know, it was like there. And Leno talks about coming in one night, and he just saw Sam Kinison with a gun out on the table. It's like, this is crazy. You
know? Yeah.
And then it went, it got really bad and really dark. And the place, Mitzi got sick, and the club went really slow, and the Laugh Factory got really popular in the Improv, and the place almost died for years, and I wasn't around for a long time. So I didn't even realize, there were, you know, in the early episodes is like me dragging back all my old kind of people I knew, like Letterman and Leno and Richard Lewis Jim Carrey and Howie Mandel.
Did you get Michael Keaton? Was Michael Keaton?
Yeah, Michael Keaton. Yeah, I got Michael Keaton. He's
That's my
there.
Guy. That's my favorite name on that wall. I'm like, Michael Keaton. Yeah. Everyone forgets you. He was a stand-up.
And it was great. The bits with Michael Keaton are great. That's episode 1. But then the later episodes, I'm more like a reporter because I didn't know the story about Joe Rogan being banned and the Carlos Mencia and all that stuff. And that was fun, you know, and,
yeah.
And really, you know, a lot of it I knew because I met Burr. Burr was an actor in one of my movies, you know, and so I went in there with him. And a lot of it I heard from you, you know. Yeah.
So Mike, for those of you who don't know, Mike directed an episode of Billions, and that's how.
Yeah,
Mike
probably one of the better episodes. Let's be honest.
Yeah, I remember.
Probably the only episode you ever hit your mark.
Hey, I'm terrible at hitting my mark. I'm bad at it. What's fun about working with Mike is, it's a lot of times, you know, there's different directors on episodes, and they're like, you know. They're directors. They know how to come in and direct, but Mike is a comic, and that never leaves you. So, and I was telling Jay off air, like, we would break for a scene, and Mike would be like, so what's going on in comedy? And you're just like, that guy sucks, this guy's good, and Mike was like, yeah, is that club still good? And you're like, yeah, and you're like, all right, cool. And then everyone, you know, every other director you work with, they're like, okay, so I think we're going to set this shot up in your motivation. And Mike's like, so where are you at this weekend? Yeah, you're doing 5? All right, that's pretty good. Yeah. They're paying for travel.
Well, the good thing about I don't think I've really directed any show, TV shows that wasn't mine. I really haven't done that a lot. And the good thing about it was, it was pretty obvious when I got there that those guys really didn't want me to do much. You know, these guys write the show, they run the show.
And yeah.
I was just there to help, you know, just kind of, you know, I guess I was there in case fire broke out.
You're the best substitute teacher we had.
Yeah, you know, and you're really there just, hey, if you have an idea or if you have, well, they really don't want you to have any ideas. They really want, you're really there just to, you know, with the acting. I don't know. I don't even know why you're there. But the fact is, it was really a great time, you know?
Yeah,
all the other directing I've done in my life, there's so much pressure.
Yeah.
You know, you gotta, everything's on your shoulders. This one, there was no pressure. So I was just having a great time with you and your buddies, you know? And,
yeah, it was fun to like talk to Mike, but then Mike was telling me, you know, he's like, I'm going to start doing this Comedy Store documentary. And it's awesome that it turned into a 5-part series.
Yeah,
we go deep into it.
On what you mentioned before, does the documentary explore the Carlos Mencia, Joe Rogan stuff?
Yeah, that's episode 4, and this Sunday night.
You speak to both of them.
I didn't speak to Carlos. You know,
he doesn't want to talk about it.
I don't think so. I don't think so. And you know, Joe's a big part of bringing the store back.
Sure,
that, that was the story. It was really been the flow of the store. And also what I was really concentrating on was the store, the comedians who are a big part of the store now, who were part of the store, and Mitzi. And then also what was really interesting to me, which I think you guys will relate to, is the different technologies over the years. Because when we got out there, you had to do the Tonight Show.
Yeah.
Then you had to get a cable special.
Yeah.
No, then you had to get a sitcom.
Yeah.
Then it was a cable special. Then it was like Netflix special. And now, you know, it's like a podcast.
I guess I've been doing it 21 years now. In that, the change that I've seen has been insane. Even like I said, even like the goals or the motivation for everything, if right down to when you're starting and you're trying to get in the clubs, and the advice was always like, tell your story, man. What's your story for the sitcom? You know, your set should be setting up your what you're sick of, what's your mom like, and your family, and what's going on with it. And it, you know, they wanted to get away from like the observational thing, and now none of that, even like the desire for a sitcom is down because you'd rather just have a popular web series holds more value sometimes almost.
Well, what I love about the greatest thing, because I kind of walked away from the whole stand-up world for a long time, you know, and what I like the best is, and I think I told you this, Dan, you know, we would come into the clubs and we'd go, who's here? Who's in the audience? You know, it was like, you know, would want to know who was there in case we could get seen or something, you know? Right. People that are doing well, they don't give a fuck who's here, you know?
Yeah.
You know, they just, because people that are, if you're smart and you're doing well, you're your own boss. You're not looking to get discovered. You know, you're making your own, you're building your own brand, your own audience, and your own voice.
No, you're absolutely right. It doesn't really take those things anymore to like motivate. Everyone can be their own individual empire.
Yeah, and it's strange how much it's shifted. You know, Mike, how old were you when you did The Tonight Show? 18 was the first
19, time? 18, 19, yeah.
I mean, that's like, you know, you do that at 19 years old, and that sets you up for their, like, you did it. You did the hardest thing. And I would say now in 2020, you know, both Jay and I have done late night sets, and I would say in 2020, a late night set doesn't mean anything anymore.
No, so that was the funniest with the movie Punchline always. You know, the scouts are out there, or the whatever. The late night is, they said, like, by the time I got in, they were almost like the late night Tonight Show, the equivalent of being Tonight Show was like having, like, Insomniac, like Dave Attell had Insomniac. Like, that's the same value as Tonight Show was back in the day. Doing Tonight Show once, having your own show, then you're kind of known for something like that. Now it's how many people follow you on your phone, you know, on your
that's
phone
right.
apps.
It's something that Jay and I were talking about actually earlier in this episode, that this episode's going to go in. We were talking about how for a while, you know, it moved from late night sets to like specials, and then getting on a Comedy Central roast would be that kind of Tonight Show push, where you would go from working comedy clubs to theaters. If you had a great, like Amy Schumer, Anthony Jeselnik, they had these great roast sets, and then they're like, they do it twice, and now they're doing theaters.
But you know what hasn't changed, and this is what was really interesting to me, and nobody can talk me out of this. It takes 20 years.
Yeah.
It just takes 20 years. You know, everybody, it takes 5 years before you, and I go, what are you talking about? Everyone that I know that's great, or, you know, I don't care if you get it tonight. You can get a Tonight Show, and you can get on a sitcom in 3 years. But you're going to be out of the business in 5, or you're going to still be, you're going to be struggling again. But if you really want to be, have a long, to everyone I know that's really good and that's in this game for their life, it's 20 years. You're going to spend 20 years on the bench, in the, off, on the ice. It's 20 years.
Yeah. Just doing it for 20 years.
I can't personally argue with that at all. but I do think you're right. I think but I don't know if there's an aspiration to greatness in the act of stand-up comedy. I think a lot of that's gone. I think stand-up comedy is always, for most people at this point, a leaping pad to bigger, better things. My personal thing was never saw past comedy to movies or TV. That seemed like a symptom of everything. Like, oh, you got to audition for stuff because that's what you do, or you should write a screenplay. I wanted just to do stand-up comedy only, and I do, and now I liken it so much to broadcasting that it's a similar thing. You know, I think it's the same kind of thing as broadcasting a stand-up comedy, but I do think that I think no one really, just like I said, like, you know, there's not going to be a lot of doctors and lawyers because every teenager wants to be a YouTube celebrity. I think the same thing. I don't know if it's going to be like amazing comics who have like longevity because everyone's going to jump onto their own little thing.
But I think there's still, I think there's comics out there that still, you know, I know our generation is filled with comics. Like, the reason I like to do TV is because I feel it gets more eyes on my stand-up. That's why the Bonfire, it's like you do everything that you can to get people to watch your stand-up. But I see what you're saying is there's a lot of people now who are just using stand-up as, well, I can make money, I can go do live shows and I'll make money. But
can you imagine signing a contract that was like, you'll be rich and famous, but you're gonna just be like on a, you know, NBC cutter sitcom, but you can't do stand-up comedy anymore, but you'll never worry about, you'll be famous and you'll never have to worry about money ever again. I'd be like, dude, that's not what I like doing in this. It's not
well, but that's, you know, listen, that even back then there was a lot of that, you know. And I remember that, you know, there was Leno, I was really good friends with Leno, and he used to always tell me, don't give up your act. And I did, you know, I did for a long time because I just didn't have the energy to do. I was making movies, you know, and I just, that's really what I wanted to do. You sure. Know? Yeah. And I never thought I would do anything but be a comedian. Yeah. I wanted to be a stand-up comic. I wanted to be Woody Allen, you know. Yeah. But you know, your life changes. But I do think, I know, having spent 2 years making this documentary and getting to back really to and appreciate, you know, I would never be a stand-up comic again. It's not what I love, but I have fallen back in love with the art of stand-up. I feel like there's much more passion for it than ever before. And the people that are doing it do want to do it just to do it. And I feel like there is an ability to just be a stand-up. Guys like yeah. Burr are guys like Burr and there's a lot of people and Dan and you guys are because you can be comedians and be broadcasters, like you say, and do a podcast and just do your thing, and it doesn't cut into it. You don't have to then sure. go be a sitcom star. Yeah. And, you know, doing a podcast every week or twice a week or whatever, or show how many times, it just makes it helps you with your voice so much more.
Absolutely.
We didn't have that, you know? We didn't have yeah. that. You had to do one or the other. You know, I had to go do movies or TV shows.
And
know?
I think that's something that our generation is lucky to have, and definitely something I'm lucky to have, where I can see how much of an improvement I made as a stand-up comic from before we did this radio show to doing it to 5 years later of doing 8 hours of a week of Jay and I being funny with each other. You're right, Mike. It just yep. lends itself to make yourself better at stand-up. It's something that you said about it takes 20 years is that's, you know, anyone that documents stand-up comedy says that. It's a thing of like, it's, and it makes, because it makes sense, because you have to do the repetitions. You have to learn it. There's a book called The Comedians by Cliff Nesteroff, and he did, you know, he chronicles stand-up from the 20s up to modern day, like the actual stand-up comedy, and how it got out of, like, you know, different, like the Borscht Belt and all that stuff. And the one thing he said is, as fast as someone rises is as fast as they fall. He's like, that's the right. one thing, that's the one thing I've noticed in doing my research, is the faster someone ascends up to the top, they have just as fast as fall. And the guys that take forever to get up to the top stay there, because it takes the years. And I think that's something that you were saying about the 20 years, which isn't a surprise that it takes that
yeah long. And I just think that if you focus completely, in fact, I would say that billions is holding you back.
Yeah.
If I were you, I would finish this particular episode and done. Then I would call those two guys and I would say, listen, fuckers.
Yeah.
I don't need you anymore.
Done.
I don't need you. Okay. You don't write me in enough.
Okay.
So fuck off.
All right.
It's a Hollywood director telling you that, Dan. It's a Hollywood director telling you that.
Make the jump, Soder. Do you want to be in films or do you want to be on television?
No. You don't need these people. And I got to tell you something else. Big J's holding you back.
All right.
These other wrong. People are holding you back, Dan.
He's not wrong, Dan.
Time to unclip these.
Show.
Yeah, time to unclip these wings. Yeah,
I got those.
Yeah,
I got those rubber bands around your claws, dog.
Dude, you better let these snappers out, dude. Let my snappers out. But you know what, man? It's, and Mike, I'm sure you saw it in the late 70s or 80s. I think what annoys me as a comedian is you made that evolution naturally to, like, all right, I'm doing movies now. Now I don't have the energy to do stand-up. Did you see people that were straight pimping out stand-up that were just like, fuck this, I'm doing stand-up for a fucking check and then I'm out of here. You guys can go fuck yourselves.
Dax Shepard.
Some people. Not really. I mean, even like Michael Keaton, he was a great stand-up comic. He loved it. He loved it, and then he just kind of just went away.
Then
you know?
Mr. Mom knocked him out of it.
Yeah, he had to keep fucking.
Maybe Night Shift. What was his first pick? I think it was Night Shift. His
Gun. Yeah,
that was Night Shift. Yeah, then Gung Ho. When was no Gung Ho?
No, no night, Johnny. Night Johnny Shift. Dangerously, maybe.
Yeah, good. Yeah, that's right. But he, and then he had a series with Jim Belushi. called Working Stiffs.
Oh, yeah. Dude. I totally forgot about.
You know, and then, you know, but I didn't see, no, I think the people that were there really believed in it, but there were a lot of guys that, too, that went on to be sitcom writers and sitcom producers. You know, Barry Levinson was there as a comedian, and he became and went on to become a director. You know, Judd Apatow was there, you know, Craig T. Nelson.
Craig T. Nelson is one I didn't realize.
Was also in some of this time, though, was the people went very quickly from, like, club comic to, like, stadium. I mean, you had your Dice and Kinison where it was, like, as soon as people knew who they were. I mean, I remember I was young, but even my stepfather and his friends and then my friends as I got older, like, those tapes, those VHSs got passed around. Of like, have you seen the Sam K? Like, and everyone just sort of found out who they were, you know, almost like Jerky Boys style. Like, it circulates underground. Like, the tape that we had of Dice Man Cometh that me and my stepfather watched was given to him by his friend. And then ultimately, some one of my friends or some, his parents or something took it, you know?
Like, absolutely.
And they became stadium acts, like so quick. You just needed that one little push, like the Rodney Dangerfield Young Comedian special would put you, if you
popped. Well, I have to say, it might have felt quick to you guys, but
sure,
it wasn't quick. You know, it was. I mean, look, does it feel like Bill Burr went from big to selling out Madison Square Gardens really quick, or does it feel like it?
No, because I do. Yeah, but again, that's just I have the benefit in that situation of, like, I remember doing empty shows at Caroline's on a Wednesday with Bill Burr. So I do remember that personally. No, I know it was still, but it was definitely in there. Like, I think, right, with Kinison and Dice, it was in their first 10-year run. Like, when they got that kind of big, and then they were big for quite some time.
Yeah, but I'm just saying it happened over, I would say, because I remember both of those guys, when it happened, it took several years for that kind of thing to happen, where all of a sudden they were playing Madison Square Gardens, right. You know, from the time they started getting hot.
Who was the fastest? Was it Dice that rose the fastest?
Yeah, I would say, yeah. Dice became just kind of a sensation. But you were right. Both of them were, the thing that really kicked it off was that those Dangerfield specials.
Yeah.
Did they, when you talked to Andrew Dice Clay for this documentary, did he reveal anything that you didn't expect him? Like, were there stories that you didn't expect to hear that you were like, oh shit, I didn't even know that happened?
Did Jill come down with 250? Did she fuck Jack up there?
Did Mrs. Rover, Rover took over? Was it?
Yes, yes. I did not know he was Japanese.
He goes, big reveal. My name's Daisy-san.
there wasn't a lot. He happened to be a guy that I knew really well.
Okay. Yeah. I was wondering if there's anything like with someone you knew, you know what I mean? Like sometimes you sit down for an interview and they tell a story and you're like, I've known you for fucking 30 years. I didn't know that happened.
Well, the funny thing about Dice was I was there right in the middle of all that for Dice. I had been making a movie called Coup de Ville, which was my first movie with Joe Roth, who became the head of 20th Century Fox, and they filmed this big Dice concert and at Madison Square Gardens.
Dice
and there
rules.
Wasn't Dice Rule, and there wasn't a full thing, and they wanted to do a wraparound, and Dice said, okay, I want Mike to write it and direct it. And so, like, at the height of his huge success, they hired me to do this film about Dice. Mm-hmm. And go everywhere Dice went and film them. And as I was doing this, it was right as Dice World came crashing down on him, where he was making all these gay jokes and the gay mafia brought him down. And I was there with him at that Saturday Night Live when Nora Dunn walked off and Sinead O'Connor wouldn't go on with him. And, you know, so he was telling
me. Had the movie been made yet? Did he already have Ford Fairlane?
Ford Fairlane was done and it was coming out, but they threw it away.
He got shit for that. Yeah, he got shit for that too.
They threw it away and they got rid of all the. He had all these other movies set to launch and start with him and Daryl. One with him and Daryl Hannah called The Gossip Columnist or The Columnist or something. And he had just basically they got to Geffen and Barry Diller and all these people and they shut his career down. They basically built cancel culture on Dice's back. They tested it out on his back, you know.
Yeah.
And he was telling me stories that it's like, I know I was with you that I was in the car with you that day. Oh fuck, I forgot. You know.
Yeah, that's gotta be crazy, right? It's like, you know. So I'm riding down there, and this guy's next to me. It's like that was me. I was sitting right there. That's so fucking funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, that's gotta be an insane thing to witness, watching someone that you get hired to film this wraparound film for, and then you see it all come down.
Yeah. Everything. Yeah.
Yeah, I started comedy with Kevin Hart, and he's one of my oldest friends in comedy for sure, but our lives have, you know, obviously deviated different directions. And so if it makes sense, I didn't really get to feel his rise, or not that he's like down at all, but I mean, or like, but I wasn't there for like his, when the people were trying to take him down and say this and that, you know, and like he got in trouble with the Oscars and all. So I never got to watch that from a first hand perspective. The closest we have was Shane.
Yeah, our buddy that got
happened to Shane.
Yeah, our buddy that got hired and then fired by SNL because of a
podcast. One of my goals today was just you're such a great guy, Dan, and I'm such a fan of yours, Jay. I was hoping to say something on the show today that would just totally destroy my career, and then would get you guys some kind of boost, you know, somehow.
Oh yeah. You're gonna light yourself on fire for us, Mike?
I was just gonna say something just awful about maybe some black female Democrat congresswoman or something.
Okay.
You know,
you're gonna bring that kind of heat.
Just ruin myself.
Yeah. I think no one ever
wanted to use me or talk about me ever again.
I'll be first in the press though, coming out and go, he thought the bitch was white.
Yeah,
the bitch was white.
And then I'm going to come out and play the real victim card and go, during the Zoom meeting, he exposed himself to me.
Yeah.
But only me in a private
chat.
Just
so you guys know, I've been jerking off this
week. Yeah.
Wow. You're bringing that late 70s comedy store vibe.
Do you have, Mike, a relationship with Roseanne at all? Because when she was young, I thought young Roseanne, stand-up.
Shit.
Stand-up was fucking great, man. I really loved it. She's had quite a roller coaster.
Well, I'll tell you, not only that, I'll tell you whose stand-up was great. If you guys ever get a chance to see the doc, you know, Leno's early stand-up was great. And people don't know it. You know, I compare him to Burr. You know,
damn.
Yeah, I hear a lot of people say it. Even to the best endorsement to me is Howard Stern, who does not like Jay Leno as a person. He's pretty clear about. Says always though that when he was a club comic, that there was no one as good, like no one.
No better. One, and I knew him really well. He was like I was like his little buddy. I hung out with him every night, you know, but I had some old video of him that I put in the documentary. And you see, and the funny thing about him is that he never laid it down. He never did a special on it. You know, he did one special, but it was already even incrementally past that period in his life where he was kind of, had already gone a little bit more commercial. But when, in the early days, everybody would go inside when Jay came on. Everybody, and his stuff was edgy and funny and just raw, you know. And I'll tell you, man, he was awesome. I got some of that stuff in there, and Letterman talks about it. Letterman says Letterman in the documentary says, I never saw him bomb ever, you know, and he was great.
So when you, when you're friends with Leno and you see a guy like this who's like an unbelievable stand-up comic, he's just lights out, and then you kind of see him go down that corporate trail where he starts doing, you know, like safe things and safe jokes, is there ever a moment where you're talking to Jay Leno where you're like, yo, what are you doing? What are you, what's going on? Why are you doing Doritos commercials?
Yeah, we talked about it a lot, but, yeah. but he made a decision, and you know, he wanted to play to a bigger room.
Okay.
He actually made a for him a very smart, sane choice.
Yeah, I mean, we
was he dark? Was he? It was much darker and edgier. Obviously, darker and edgier, but I mean, like significantly so, where it was really like.
Oh, he had this eyebrow raising stuff. Said, he goes. I read this thing in the paper. The average male has 10,000 orgasms in his life. I just got off the phone with my doctor. He says I got 9 left.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and he would do this. He would do this bit about, you know, fucking these women, and I mean,
weird to think even that setup of like Jay Leno being like,
so a pussy was so wet, right?
Oh yeah, oh,
so I'm giving him some mean cock, you know?
Yeah,
yeah, but that was his act.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's crazy.
What do they call it? Winston? Double anal. Look, if you can believe that this fucking piece of road meat is squirting on my sheets, you know, and I'm looking around.
Dude, that is dirty.
Telling you, man. Yeah, but he just decided it was incremental. But then at one point he decided, I want to get the Tonight Show, and then I want to play to that crowd that watches the Tonight Show, and I want to go out there. And he did one special for Showtime, and he owned it, and he burned it. He claims he burned it, and it's never been seen again because
crazy. Just to burn your special, just be like, no one can ever see it ever.
Well, he wanted to keep the material fresh, you know. Yeah. And he when he goes out and he plays shows now, he does a lot of that material still.
Yeah, yeah, you know, why burn it if you're going to tour with it and you got the Tonight Show's exposure?
You know, he's a different guy. You know, he just really thinks he sees the world and stand up different than a lot of other people do. And
could you see, as his friend, being his close friend, did you see when he fell in love with denim and just started wearing it all the time?
Yep.
That's a bigger intervention than him going clean. Yeah. As you're like, as your
yeah, exactly. As his friend, you feel responsible for not telling him denim on denim.
It's a real.
Hey, for a while that got him laid.
He goes,
yeah, you walk around in a Canadian tuxedo, you tend to have a lot of pussies around that, yeah.
And he had a big turquoise, belt. I'll tell you, Leno did really well.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
Bolo ties, I'm seeing.
Yeah, Mike, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Am I getting kicked off?
We're wrapping up.
Am I getting fired?
You're getting the light. You got canceled, dude. Yeah, you
crossed the line.
Getting canceled, hey, but
thanks a lot for having me on, you guys. I really liked your show, and I wanted to come on.
Thanks for doing it, man. This was awesome.
It was really awesome you come on the show, and make sure you check out the 5-part documentary series, The Comedy Store, airing on Showtime Sunday nights at 10 p.m. All available right now. The 3 episodes are available on demand, so make sure you go check it out.
Jay, thanks for reminding him to say the name of it. I really appreciate it.
Jay's a good man.
It's Comedy Store.
It's Comedy Store.
No, I'm here to pick him up when he falls.
Yeah. Mike Binder, thank you so much, man. You're the best.
See you guys.
Take care, Mike. Let me tell you this before we go. You can see Dan Soder live because he's living large. Oh. This weekend, he is going to be in Philadelphia at Helium. November 5th through the 7th, he's going to be at Acme Comedy Club in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Dan, I'm doing this all off memory right now, buddy.
Damn, are you really? Because I'm looking at the plugs and I'm like, Jay's nailing every single one of them.
November 5th through the 7th. His album, Son of a Gary, now an album available on SiriusXM and Pandora, coming to a streaming service near you very soon. And, of course, you go to DanSoder.com for tickets to all his shows.
Big J's in Philly, but he already was because that was
tonight.
That's tonight. So, what a great show. But Denver, you can go get tickets to see Big J at the Comedy Works South October 29th through the 31st. And then he's going to be in Phoenix himself at Stand Up Live November 12th through the 14th. For tickets and other tour dates, visit BigJComedy.com. And of course,
Six and Jump.
Six and Jump. cc.com/thebonfire.
Le Bonfire.
Le Bonfire. We love you guys. We'll see you next time on the Quarantine Tapes.